still no pandemic relief bill as benefits are about to run out. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio, who's on assignment. Republicans delayed unveiling a coronavirus relief bill. Turns out there are still disagreements with the White House, despite claims by some officials they were resolved. We will keep you posted. The U.S. and Europe have been fighting over Airbus and Boeing for getting on close to two decades, each accusing the other of illegally subsidizing their plane manufacturers. This led to the U.S. imposing tariffs on things like French wine and Italian cheese earlier this year. Now Airbus says it has reached an agreement with some European governments that should end that fight, or at least part of it. The BBC's Andrew Walker has more.
Airbus says it has now fully complied with all the WTO's requirements. The company says that changes made to loan agreements with the governments of France and Spain remove any justification for US tariffs. This is a long-running dispute. It's 16 years since the US complained to the WTO that Airbus received support from the European Union and some individual countries, including Britain, that were not permitted under the organisation's subsidy rules. The US was successful and then was given permission to impose tariffs after the WTO found that Europe had failed to implement its ruling. There is a separate dispute underway in which the EU has made similar complaints about the US and Boeing. The EU is currently awaiting a WTO ruling on imposing its own tariffs against the US. I'm the BBC's Andrew Walker for Marketplace.
China's national security law in Hong Kong, which gives Beijing tighter control over the financial hub, appears to be trickling into everyday life through the financial sector. Financial companies, afraid of getting caught up in the new law, are self-censoring. Our China correspondent Jennifer Pak joins me now from Shanghai. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Sabri.
Hong Kong's new national security law is, well, it's about national security. What does that have to do with financial institutions?
Well, the law is very vague, and it gives a special police unit extra powers to search, conduct electronic surveillance, seize assets. Chinese officials say this will only be targeted towards a small group of people, but now even professionals are worried.
Well, it sounds like the financial sector is itself quite worried in particular.
Yeah. And they're self-policing. So Reuters has recently reported that global banks are looking into whether their clients in Hong Kong have ties to the pro-democracy movement in case this will get them in trouble under the new law. A pro-democracy activist named Joshua Wong says he received a call last week from HSBC asking him about a recent transfer from a book publisher. Now he's worried about whether he can open another bank account in the future, something which he calls financial censorship, quote unquote.
Financial censorship. Do you think people are actually afraid to speak because of this?
Yeah. I mean, lawyers, bankers and investors who might have been okay to talk about the pro-democracy movement a year ago are now not only silent on social media, but they're also watching what they say in private chat apps. So the fear is that this national security law is going to crush free speech and the independent legal system, both of which are very key to Hong Kong's success as a financial hub.
Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pak in Shanghai, thank you so much.
Thanks, Sabri.
Let's do the numbers. Dow, S&P and NASDAQ futures are down in the 0.2% to 1% range, with the Dow future down 62 points.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Of all the industries having to adjust to the pandemic, education is having one of the rougher rides. A lot of colleges and universities still haven't figured out the fall term, let alone the long term. In person, online, freshmen on campus, but not seniors. What about dorms, dining halls? The only thing they're all ready for is a financial blow, and that could land especially hard on the nation's 100 or so historically black colleges and universities, which often operate with fewer resources. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab reports.
Usually by this point in the summer, Sydney Evans, the CFO at Morgan State University in Baltimore, has the budget nailed down.
I typically have certainty around a number of very critical components to the university's financial position.
The pandemic has brought nothing but uncertainty at a time when many schools are already struggling. Enrollments are down, which means less revenue from tuition. And at historically Black colleges and universities, tuition is already often lower than at predominantly white schools.
That puts us behind the eight ball from the very beginning.
Plus, HBCUs don't typically take in as much in donations. On average, their endowments are 70% smaller than other schools.
That's a big amount. And what that tells us is that they just don't have the safety net that non-HBCUs often have.
Mary Beth Gassman directs the Rutgers Center for Minority-Serving Institutions. She says schools' economic struggles can reflect systemic ones.
You know, a lot of times I'll hear people say, well, alumni don't give to HBCUs or people don't give to HBCUs. And one thing that we have to remember is African Americans don't have the same kinds of assets.
Though the pandemic is a new problem, HBCUs' financial struggles are not. And they've weathered storms before. To get through this one, they're focusing on keeping students safe and enrolled. At Morgan State, classes will be a mix of in-person and online. Student housing will expand beyond dorms to apartments and hotels near campus. And there will be more counselors available to help students deal with pandemic-related stress. Ivory Tolston is president of the nonprofit Quality Education for Minorities and a professor at Howard University.
The fact that HBCUs do know how to do more with less, I think that may put HBCUs in an even stronger position to withstand some of the burden.
Tolston says schools may also see enrollment go up with the ongoing protests over police brutality and systemic racism. Studies show that after periods of racial unrest, more people apply to HBCUs.
There's some optimism that more of that could happen as students are trying to find a place where their cultural identity will be affirmed.
A sentiment that goes back more than 180 years to the founding of America's first historically Black college. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Alex Schroeder. Our engineers are Brian Allison, Jay Siebold, and Charlton Thorpe. And in New York, I am Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.